Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vora. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vora.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. Now, most of the interactions that most of us actually have with the government, it's not with the president. It's not with Congress. It's not with the Senate. It's usually at the local, the city council level. My first guest today is Paul Ryan McKinney. He's running for city councilor of Albuquerque in District 9. He's also a member of the Libertarian Party of New Mexico Central Committee. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's talk about some of the issues going on in Albuquerque. And one of the things that's really been kind of firing up people across the country is the issue of civil asset forfeiture. What is your stance on civil asset forfeiture? What is the current situation? Tell me about what's going on over there.
Well, currently what's going on in Albuquerque is the state of New Mexico ended civil asset forfeiture in 2015 without a conviction. You know, so if there was no conviction, they couldn't steal your stuff. Okay. And Albuquerque found a loophole so that if there was a vehicle involved in a DWI, they were impounding and taking that vehicle, you know, regardless of who it belonged to.
So when you say regardless of who it belonged to, does that mean that, you know, Fred could be driving Joe's car, and then they impound Joe's car, even though Joe wasn't driving?
You're 100% correct on that. And then Joe would have to fight a legal battle. There was actually a story in 2016 of a mom who had lent her son the car, and it took her 6 months to get her car back, which she was even still making payments on.
And that's a real... You know, some folks who are listening to the show, maybe you guys have 5, 6, 7 cars. But for a lot of people, working people, not having a car is a major economic and financial burden. And so what you're saying is that the state recognized that this was immoral. And this at the Albuquerque level, the city level, they decided – No. They can't even be as ethical as the state government. They need to just go straight for the theft. Is that about right?
That is correct. And actually, the state senator that put forward that bill to end the civil asset forfeiture filed a lawsuit against the city, and the judge found that she didn't have standing and threw the case out.
Fascinating. Now, that's what people often don't get. They don't get that the city council can do so much good or so much bad. Now, if you're elected, what are you going to do about this? What are some of the things that you want to do?
Well, I want to just completely end it.
Okay.
Without a conviction and without an order from a judge, there should be no civil asset forfeiture, and I would rather see the order from the judge, you know, being the form of a fine, you know, et cetera, not necessarily taking somebody's property. We have a median income in the city of about $42,000, and it's a very spread out city. So sometimes this could be, you know, a family that has multiple kids and only one car, and if their car gets taken, they're kind of up a creek without a paddle, you know.
Now, that type of behavior is, I mean, to me, when I see that, I can see no justification for it other than people like stealing stuff and getting away with it. Are there other areas? Are there other things that Albuquerque is doing that you want to stop or reduce or correct?
Yeah, pretty much everything that they're doing.
Okay.
It is very difficult in this city to have a small business. Their regulations have driven businesses to surrounding cities.
So even if your car hasn't been stolen, there's still other things that you need to overcome.
Right. Yeah. You know, I've kind of made a joke of it, but, you know, we're the only city in the state where you can't buy raw milk. Like I said, the issues go on. I was just talking to a guy who was trying to expand his machine shop, and after fighting with the city for 2 years, just moved just down the road to Las Lunas, which is just south of here.
Mm-hmm. And now, what caused him to do that, and what could you do to reverse that? Because I assume it wasn't the raw milk that he needed for his machine shop, right?
No, just not able to get the licenses to expand. Just not, you know, they just, New Mexico suffers from some of the highest levels of government corruption in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't know somebody in government, you're going to have a hard time getting the zoning that you need, getting the permits and the licenses that you need to do business here.
Now, what would your position, like, what would you try to do in terms of some of these regulations?
I think you just get rid of them entirely. They don't prove to help anybody. The only folks they help are the larger companies in town, and the city's more than happy to issue industrial revenue bonds or give special tax incentives to big businesses coming in, but they just kind of plow over the little guy.
See, and that's the thing a lot of people don't get. People are saying, well, don't regulations hurt big businesses? Not really, because a big business usually has legal staff and a small business usually does not. And a big business is usually going to get exceptions and a small business is not. So it is like every regulation to me, and again, I'm a little biased as a small business owner, but every regulation to me is just a way to help big businesses at the expense of small businesses.
Go ahead. I was going to say, that's correct. And right now the city is looking at what they're calling a sick leave act. It would allow for every employee to have 4 days of sick leave, but it has multiple punitive items in there. So if somebody took a day of sick leave within the last 90 days, you can't fire them. Right now, New Mexico is an at-will employment state, so you don't have to provide a reason to fire somebody. But now you'd have to have documentation of what they've done and why they're being fired. And for a guy that's, you know, running a small business, has just two or three employees, they don't have an accountant. They don't have an HR department. They're not able to keep the records. You know, even if they gave the sick leave time, they can't keep the records to comply with the law.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that's not purely a New Mexico thing. That's a nationwide thing going on right now where small businesses are getting punished when they fire somebody, even if that person's, you know, lazy or just not doing anything. What about, are there other areas that are going to be important for your campaign or what you're going to do when you get elected?
So one of the important things that we're hitting on right now is public safety. We have the highest rate of automobile theft in the country. Mm-hmm. And right now, APD, Albuquerque Police Department, is under a DOJ consent decree. Mm-hmm. And as much as I hate the federal government in the city, the only way we're going to get rid of them is by completing the requirements of the consent decree.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's kind of a big issue right now with everybody. And I know that folks listening to the show have different feelings about law enforcement and whether it should be privatized or run by the city, et cetera. You know, the fact is, you know, the people of Albuquerque are taxed and it's paid for by the city. Mm-hmm. And so we do have an extreme shortage of officers, but, you know, nobody's applying for the job.
Mm-hmm.
Even our officers here are getting blackballed by other departments when they try to transfer, you know, to different states to get out of Albuquerque. And the standard answer of throw more money at it is what the city council has been doing now for years, and we're still at the same number of officers we were 2 or 3 years ago. But they refuse to hold these folks accountable, and that is explicitly even the monitor for the consent decree looked right at the city council and told them it was their responsibility to make sure that this got done, make sure that this training, you know, occurred, and make sure that the police got the things that they needed, and they just brushed it off. And so that's a big part of my campaign, is getting city council back involved in the police department, holding them accountable so that we know when there's a use of force or there's a police officer-involved shooting, the people can know what actually happened, what steps were taken, and hold these people accountable for what they're doing.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, before we run out of time, if somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, what's a good website for them to go to?
Website's www.paulryan4abq.com. Or if you search for Paul Ryan McKinney, ABQ City Councilor on Facebook, my page will pop up.
Awesome. Paul, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show with us today.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Guys, we just finished talking with Paul Ryan McKinney. His website, paulryan4abq.com. Now, 4 over there is like the number 4. You can learn about his positions on issues. You can get involved with this campaign, donate, all that kind of stuff. Now, what Paul's doing is exactly what we all need to be doing. It's what I'm going to be doing in 2018, which is you got to run for office. See, if you run for office, you're giving libertarians the ability to vote for libertarians. You're giving them the ability to vote for less government. You're giving them the ability to vote for more freedom. All those people, those disaffected voters, those non-voting people, all those people you hear about who don't care, let me tell you something. I was one of those people. And when I started seeing that there were people who I could vote for, you know, in good conscience vote for, that I actually agreed with, that got me involved in politics. Your campaign might get God knows how many people involved. If you're ready to do that, please go to lp.org. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
Have you found the beauty inside of you? Join Bonnie Bonadeo each week for Beauty Inside and Out. We'll explain how beauty plays a part in everybody's lives. Our guests are makeup artists, hairdressers, and doctors. But we'll also feature holistic and wellness specialists and spiritual advisors. You can find that beauty inside and express it to its fullest on the outside. Tune in to Beauty Inside and Out every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Why do some people seemingly make the same mistakes when it comes to love and relationships? What is the best way to find love? Make a visit each week to Destination Love. Host Shelley Pumphrey will bring what you need to know to find love. No, it's not about the next fad, dating site tips, scoring the first date, or looking your best. Rather, it's empowerment, knowing that your authentic self works best and the science behind finding love. Destination Love is live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern on Voice America Variety.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vohra.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. I want you guys to think about this fundamental question, which is, what is the actual difference between socialism and communism? Now, I know that some of you guys think, well, communism's a political thing maybe, and maybe socialism's an economic thing, and there's, you know, some other really complex difference. But whatever those differences are, they are technicalities, and I guarantee you roughly 99.999% of the human population has no idea what the difference is. Even I right now, I'm like, yeah, communism is supposed to be a political system, but, you know, as far as the economics, I don't know what the difference is between the two. The reason is because they're basically the same thing. They're basically systems in which money gets stolen from you and spent on nonsense that you don't want. Now, many years ago, decades ago, the U.S. got involved in an organization designed to stop communism, NATO. They said, we're going to work together and we're going to stop communism using this organization. But the result has been as follows. First, European countries, they don't need to pay for their own defense, right? Because they're allied with the United States. So they don't need to be fiscally responsible. They don't need to have big and thriving economies. They can just, you know, kind of do whatever. And the whatever that they kind of do, usually basically socialism. A big pile of socialism has spread throughout all of Europe. Because we're paying for their defense, that enables them to be socialist. Because we have to pay for the defense, it requires us to be socialist. Whatever the difference is, if you're going to say, well, you know, taxes are higher in communism, not really. I mean, taxes in China and taxes in France, much of them are really that different. Maybe they're slightly higher in China, maybe they're slightly lower. You can talk about civil liberties. Yeah, those are worse in China, but I'm not sure that has anything to do with communism. That's more of an issue of totalitarianism. And there are plenty of infringements on civil liberties in many other countries as well. What's especially interesting is that NATO has become an excuse in America to create a military many times the size of what we could possibly need for defense. Right now, we have defensive capabilities that would make sense if we were literally in a declared war against every other country on Earth. We spend more on military than the next several nations combined, including Russia and China. But Russia, China, a whole bunch of other countries in there. Add all that up, and the United States is still spending more. Why? Why is it costing us so much? Is it because we're more inefficient? I don't think so. Is it because there's some special thing that makes us unable to balance the... No, there's nothing wrong with Americans. There's nothing wrong with capitalism. The reason that we're paying so much is because we are, first, using the military for what it was never meant to do, getting involved in other people's civil wars, trying to create and build nations, trying to be the police of the whole world. So one, that's going to be expensive. And if that wasn't bad enough, we've agreed to these foolishly one-sided deals where we agree to pay for everyone else's defense. Not directly, but by having a military many times as large as we would ever need. Now imagine this. I want you guys to think of two possible different scenarios, because there's two ways that we could make a better situation here. Situation one is we just pull out of NATO entirely. And then we scale back our military. We scale it back to what we actually need for defense. Whatever we need to protect actual America from any foreign armies, we keep that level of military. Keeping in mind that we are a nuclear power, so it's probably not a very big military that we're going to need. It's not a military big enough to protect every country from every country. That's stupid. Just a military big enough to protect America from any realistic or potential or, hell, maybe not even that realistic options or threats. That's option one. We just say, listen, we're done with NATO. We're not. If you want to defend your country. We're not going to do it for you. We're not going to give you an alliance that basically involves us jumping to everybody's rescue all the time, whether they ask for it or even if they don't ask for it. So that's going to be the first thing. Option two, though, is something that's been presented by quite a few people, either via email, social media. I know a lot of you guys like to post stuff on social media or send me stuff on social media. The other option is an interesting one, and this is taking capitalism to the next level. So instead of saying, we'll provide you military protection, you know, because you're our allies and we like you, and you know you're going to do the same for us as if Albania's army is going to give us any benefit, or France's, or Germany's, or England's, or any of the countries that were currently part of NATO. Instead of doing that kind of nonsense, we can simply change it around. Say, listen, we will provide you with this defense for the following price. Then we do what a normal business does. We look at whatever our costs are, whatever the additional costs are for additional weapons, additional staff, additional whatever. We add that up, we double it, and we say that's what you need to pay. In other words, we make a profit on NATO. Instead of NATO being a cost, we make a profit and use that to reduce tax rates, or hell, even make them negative. I mean, imagine that for a second. Imagine that instead of on April 15th, you having to pay a bunch of taxes, imagine instead you just got a kind of a dividend from Europe. $100, $50, $1,000, whatever. Imagine if you paid negative taxes. I know it sounds ridiculous to some of you, but when you have a competitive advantage, you get to make profits. That's how life works. If you happen to be really good at medicine, you get money for it. If you happen to be really good at law, you get money for it. If you happen to be really good at making shoes, you get money for it. And if you happen to be really good at having a big, giant military, you can get money for that too. If other people want you to defend them, you can get paid for that. Don't believe me? Look at a magazine like Soldier of Fortune. What are they hiring? Mercenaries. What are they doing with them? Paying them. Whichever way you do it, pulling out of ending this current form of NATO, either by pulling out of NATO or by charging NATO a high, not a high fee, not something exorbitant or insane, but you know, a profitable amount, where we more than make up for our loss, where we actually get money back, makes a lot more sense than what we're doing right now. What we're doing right now is just really expensive. Uses up a lot of lives and uses up a lot of money. It's not a good system. The great thing, by the way, that when you start to think about charging people for whatever services they're using, is that people start to really actually think about what they need. Today, one of the big goals of the Navy is to protect shipping lanes. Overall, not a bad thing to do. But if you look at the sheer firepower of the Navy and compare that to any likely threat of piracy or impressment or whatever, you'll see that the firepower is disproportionately overkill. Even then, many organizations that have very expensive cargo still have their own security. They're already still providing it. Now imagine if organizations like FedEx and other people that did a lot of shipping could create or hire or pay for some type of a protection service. It would probably cost a lot less because it would only do what they needed it to do. The weapons that the Navy has right now are bizarre overkill if you're talking about piracy. In order to pay for the protection against piracy, we ended up paying for essentially enough firepower to take over several countries. Instead of doing that, we could just, we, the shippers, just pay for what we need. Now, some folks will say, well, won't shipment places have to pay, big shipping companies have to pay more for insurance or something? Yeah, probably. But that's not as bad as you might think, at least not for America, because here's the thing. Today, companies have to decide whether to make a product overseas or in America. Given that we all have to pay for their protection, a lot of times they figure, yeah, overseas. If they had to pay extra for protection, they might change their mind. They might say, listen, given that the shipping, the protection costs of shipping are so high, why don't we just build it in America? Why don't we bring some of those jobs back? Remember, the U.S. is a net importer. So putting the cost of protecting shipping on the people who are doing the shipping, as in having the people who are using the service pay for it, not a bad idea in general, means that those people will now actually be making a smart decision. Today, we are basically subsidizing companies to do overseas production. Why? Because we are paying for the security of the shipping. If instead we stop subsidizing it, you know, they might still decide to do that. They might still decide to do shipping over there. That's fine. That's their right. But I bet that at least a few of them would say, listen, these fees, these insurance fees, these security fees are getting kind of high. I might want to change my mind and start doing stuff inside of America. And in that process, we start to bring back a whole ton of jobs. We start to bring back perhaps some parts of the manufacturing sector. Now, of course, the best way to bring back the manufacturing sector is to get rid of some of these insane laws, regulations, minimum wage laws, and all that that push people out in the first place. But in addition to doing that, we can stop subsidizing outsourcing. Today, when we all pay to protect shipping lanes, we are subsidizing outsourcing. We are paying companies to move jobs overseas. Now, if companies want to move jobs overseas, that's their right. We shouldn't be paying them to do it. We should not be paying to reduce employment in America. That does not make any sense. Now, there are a lot of people right now who are working to downsize the military to make it usable for defense only and not for all these other 50 things. If you're one of those people, there's a home for you. And that place is lp.org. You can go there, learn how to run for office, learn how to get involved in an existing campaign, learn what you can do to make the military smaller and make America freer. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a pet parent? If so, you'll want to stay up to date on the latest tech gadgets and advances for your canine or feline friend. With a ton of apps, websites, tech toys, and more, you'll want to be in the know when it comes to the real treasures and the duds. For that information, listen for Pet Lover Geek with host Lorian Clemens. We test and discuss what's hot and what's not on the pet front, so you'll be better informed. Tune in Saturdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
What makes a great leader? Most have a vision, one that starts beyond the resources available and continues from that point into developing a solid plan, organization, and company. Leadership issues are discussed each week on Voltcast, Illuminating Leadership with host Jeff Smith. Jeff has years of experience as a leader and executive coach, and his guests will bring you information that can help a team of any size. Listen every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I want to ask you this question. Why is it that today, two people working 60 hours a week are able to provide about as much as in the past, one person working 40 hours a week? See, that's a little backwards, right? We have more technology and capital in America now than we used to. And that enables each person to actually produce more. What that should mean is that one person working today 20 hours a week should be able to produce as much and therefore provide as much as what somebody working 40 hours a week could 50 years ago. But that's not the case. So what's gone wrong? What is it that money allows us to do? It allows us to exchange some of our labor for somebody else's labor. You can exchange a little bit of your labor for, let's say you're a carpenter. You can change some of your carpenting labor for somebody else's shoemaking labor. And so instead of you having to build houses and make shoes, you focus on building houses, take the money you earn, and use that to buy shoes. An hour of your labor should get you an hour of somebody else's labor, assuming it's the same level of skill and education required. Usually, if something requires a lot more skill and education, maybe an hour of your labor might only get half an hour of that person's labor, and that's fine. If somebody else's labor requires much less skill and education than yours, then maybe an hour of your labor gets you 2 hours of their labor, and that's also fine. Because what's happening over there is an exchange. It allows you to focus on what you're good at, and allows them to focus on what they're good at. But the fact is, we've all gotten better at the things that we do. One person can produce many, many, many more shoes today than one person could 100 years ago. One person can produce many, many, many more chairs today than one person could 100 years ago. One person can produce many more houses or portions of a house today than they could in the past. So what has gone wrong? Some people will tell you that what's happened is that the Fed has been printing too much money, and maybe that's a part of it, but honestly, that won't make a huge amount of difference. Because if you get that money and spend it, I mean, all that means is the price levels of everything has gone up. An hour of your labor should still get you an hour of somebody else's labor. It might mean that an hour of your labor now gets you $50 rather than $5, and an hour of their labor now costs $50 instead of $5. But the hour of labor should still be getting you an hour of labor. But I put it to you that it is not doing that right now. Today, an hour of your labor is not getting you an hour of somebody else's labor. It is not getting you. If you're a carpenter, an hour of your labor is not getting you an hour of a shoemaker's labor. It should, but it's not. What's happening to that extra labor? Well, either it's just vanishing with magic, or it's being stolen. Now, how could you steal somebody's labor? Well, what if every time you bought a shoe from that shoemaker, in addition to paying the price of the shoe, you also had to pay an additional fee? And that additional fee would cover insane foreign wars, a gigantic military designed to blow up some foreign planet or God knows what, something as insane and counterproductive as the war on drugs, highly expensive ways to spy on American citizens, including you, highly pointless ways to drive up the cost of medicines through things like an FDA, bizarre subsidies to make it cheaper to produce corn so that we have high fructose corn syrup in all of our foods and take farmland away from healthy and nutritious foods? What if that was happening? What if instead of you, an hour of your labor getting you an hour of somebody else's labor, it got you half an hour, and the other half an hour of your labor was used for that kind of nonsense? Well, that's what we would have now. But here's the thing. It's not just half of it that's being taken. I know people say the tax rate, once you add, you know, state and federal and local and property taxes, is about, you know, half of your income. It's actually a little bit worse than that, because you have to include things like excise taxes. Excise taxes are taxes on specific goods, often imports. And the result of those excise taxes is that the price of things go up. In other words, something that should cost $2 costs you $20. If something that should cost $1 costs you maybe $50, depending on how bad that excise tax is. Now, let me ask you this question. What if the following two things happened? What if, first of all, you don't have to pay any taxes at all? And at the same time, the price of everything went down. So whatever you would look at the store right now, let's say you wanted to buy a box of blueberries. Let's say today it costs $5, and let's say after all this happened, it costs 50 cents. But you don't have to pay any taxes, so you have more money now, right? You don't have to pay Social Security taxes or any of these other things. Whatever you make, you get to keep all of it. Oh, I shouldn't say get to, because that's just the natural order of things. It's not weird to not be robbed. It's weird to be robbed. So imagine that for a second. Imagine that you could keep all of your money. No one stole any of it. No property tax, no sales tax, no nonsense. And at the same time, the price of everything in the stores went down by 90%. And tell me this. Do you think that you would be able to provide with one salary as much as somebody 50 years ago? You're probably saying, no, I could probably provide a lot more. And you're right. You probably could. You know why? Because we have more advanced technology now. An hour of your labor is now magnified through automated processes, robots, power tools, machinery, all this kind of stuff means that every hour of your labor actually produces much more than people's labor did 50 years ago. So yes, you would be able to, it wouldn't take you 40 hours, it might just take you 20 hours. Hell, it might just take you 5 hours. Because the price of everything would be less, and none of your money would be taken in the first place. See, that's the thing that we can have. That's not even unreasonable. If you look at the sheer size of the things that we're paying for, and what we're paying for, it's staggering. Now, some of the things that we're paying for are silly and wasteful. A lot of our military spending right now, I think, falls into that category. But a lot of what you're paying for right now, strangely enough, is you're actually paying to make things more expensive. You're paying money to drive the price up of things that you then buy. It sounds unbelievable, I know, but it's what you're doing. For example, right now, all these government subsidies that you pay for drive up the price of college, which you then might also pay for if you decide to go to college. In other words, you pay money to make college cost more, and then you have to pay a bunch extra for college. Instead of college costing $2,000 or $3,000, it costs $50,000 or $60,000. Instead of college going up at the rate of inflation or going becoming cheaper as things become more efficient, it's going up at 3 times the rate of inflation. How's that happening? Because you're being robbed to pay to make it cost more. That is the critical difference. That is what we can have. We can have literally, you can put an end to that and never have to pay these inflated prices again. So how would we do that? Could we do it right away? Sure. Could we phase it in? Sure. There's a million different ways to do it. The way that I would recommend doing it is this. Start with whatever the biggest thing is, target that. Take your time, take your energy. Instead of saying, well, this thing is so big, it's not worth fighting, I say this thing is so big that when we beat it, we're going to get the biggest benefits. You're going to get more benefits by fighting an organization like HUD or the FDA, Department of Agriculture, Department of Defense, Department of Homeland Security, the entire government school system. You're going to get a much larger payoff by getting rid of that, downsizing it, or hell, preventing it from upsizing. We get rid of those things, we get huge benefits. Now, when we get rid of minor things, we get small benefits. So some of you say, well, I would rather fight on those things. Fine, fight on those things. Some of you say, I don't want to fight against the military or the government school system. I want to fight soda taxes. Fine, fight soda taxes. We need people fighting every single tax and every single regulation. Whatever you're passionate about, fight that thing. Fight it boldly. Fight it constantly. Write letters to the editor. Write articles. Call your congressman. If it's a national, if it's a federal thing, call your state legislator if it's a local thing. The more of those things we get rid of, the closer we get to that situation where an hour of your labor gets you an hour of somebody else's labor. If an hour of your labor gets you an hour of somebody else's labor, then what took 40 hours a week in 1950 should only take 10 hours a week today. Because government is stealing your money and using that stolen money to drive up prices, it now takes about 100 hours a week, but it could take only 10. Because of technology, our work is becoming more effective. Each hour you spend gets more done because of the advanced technology, the computers, the power tools, the robotic tools. All these things allow your work to make more things happen. And with that goes the idea that you should be able to get more things for an hour of work. Each hour of work produces more. That means each hour of work should be getting more. An hour of your work produces more, but an hour of that other person's work that you're buying from, that also produces more. Instead of an hour of his work producing one shoe, maybe it produces 10 shoes. And that means to buy a shoe, you only need to buy a tenth of an hour instead of a full hour. A life in which we could have that kind of efficiency, be free of that financial strain, be free of that unnecessary debt, have lower prices, it's not as far away as people think. To make it happen, we need to discredit, delegitimize, defund, downsize, and dismantle government. And if you want to do that, you got to get to lp.org, because that is the only organization, the only political party, I should say, that is legitimately working to massively and fundamentally dismantle and downsize government. Now, if you get to lp.org, you can learn how to run for office. You can learn how to support somebody else who's running for office. You can turn that hard labor and skill that you have into a real fight for freedom. And the way to do that is lp.org. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Where are you getting your advice on buying, selling, or maintaining your most important asset, your home? Is it from a reality show on cable TV, a comparison website, or are you just flying by the seat of your pants and gut instinct? Stop now before you make another move. Tune into Real Real Estate Today with host and realtor Deb Tomorrow. You can't afford to play guesswork when it comes to your new or existing home. Listen every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Are you or someone you know interested in attending college? With both college tuition and college enrollment up 60% since 2002, there is a lot of competition, and careful planning needs to be a part of the process. Tune in to Getting In, a College Coach Conversation, hosted by Elizabeth Heaton and featuring a team of college coach experts. We'll bring you the tips, techniques, and know-how to navigate the road to college and do so the smart way. Listen live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vohra.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. My next guest is Stephen Porter. He is running in 2018 for the U.S. House of Representatives from Virginia's 11th District. He is a strong proponent of smaller government. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Arvind. Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about some of the fiscal issues that are going on right now and how you would treat them differently. What are some of the issues that are important for you?
Well, I mean, one of the absolute biggest things simply is the debt.
Mm-hmm.
our country, depending on which numbers you look at and who you're looking at, is approaching $20 trillion in debt, which is actually greater than our GDP is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just insane. It's non-sustainable, and I don't care what funky economic model or fancy ideas you have about how government is different. Bottom line is, if you're consistently spending more money than you bring in, you're headed for a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, we've been lucky not to go tumbling over that cliff, but it's not sustainable. It's not going to last. And so we've got to start moving towards eliminating our addiction to deficit-enabled spending,
mm-hmm.
so that we can actually start to decrease the deficit, ideally get it to zero, so that we can actually start dealing with the debt itself. Otherwise, we're just going to pass this on, if we're lucky, pass it on to our children and their children. If we're not lucky, then we're looking at a true fiscal crisis, and who knows how bad that could get.
Let me ask you this. If the goal is to reduce the deficit, where would you cut spending? Because there's so much, I mean, there's so many organizations and agencies demanding all the spending. Where would you target that?
Well, first of all, I don't see why our government is paying private charities.
Okay.
It makes more sense to allow individuals to keep more money in their pocket and then decide which charities they should be supporting. It's not that a lot of these programs aren't good. Certainly they are. Mm-hmm. You know, the current budget ideas that Trump just put out had, I think, 66 different agencies that basically he's proposing eliminating. Do those agencies do good work? Of course, or at least most of them do. But everyone seems to think that just because something does good work, that means the federal government should be paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not correct. Private entities, private citizens, more localized government, frankly, are in a better position to understand the needs of their populations, better position to really understand the resources they have available to them, and frankly, are going to be a much more efficient at using those funds than us trying to send all of our funds to D.C., get run through all the political stuff, all the bureaucracy, and basically have, you know, pennies on the dollar basically going back to support those causes that are important to us and our communities. So
mm-hmm.
you start to eliminate those. Obviously, military, as you were mentioning earlier on the show, we need a strong military. We need a military that's capable of defending this country, but we've got that many times over at
mm-hmm.
this point. And so we're just spending too much money on military,
mm-hmm.
and that's one area where we have some. And I don't have an answer for this because it's so complicated, but we've got to start to look at how to deal with the entitlements. I mean, what the budget's, what, a little over $4 trillion, and just in rough numbers, somewhere over about $2.5 trillion of that is some form of either interest on the debt or some form of entitlement, and those are much harder to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But we do need to start to figure out some ways to cut back, maybe look at increasing retirement ages for Social Security, things like that, to help those programs be able to actually become somewhat more self-sufficient.
Now, a lot of people will say that a lot of these organizations are necessary because they prevent individuals from making bad decisions. What do you say to people like that?
Which individuals are making the bad decisions? And realistically, how are 535 guys and women, guys generically, sitting in D.C. from all across the country who are out of touch in many cases, and even if
mm-hmm.
they are in touch with their own citizens, you
mm-hmm.
know, I'm in Virginia's 11th district. It's a Northern Virginia district, you know, suburban. You know, how do I really understand how to make the right decision, to make good decisions for somebody in, I don't know, Fargo, North Dakota?
Mm-hmm.
You know, assuming that government has all the answers or is the one who's always going to make the right choice is frankly just stupid. you know, individuals have been making good decisions for a long time, and I think we need to trust people to be able to make decisions for their own lives and for their own communities.
let's talk a little bit about some of the spillover benefits, because usually when people hear we're going to spend less, it kind of makes it sound like we're going to get less. But sometimes when we spend less, we can actually get more. Are there any examples that you would put forward where getting rid of an agency or downsizing an agency or something like that would actually make our lives better?
Well, let's take the Department of Education. Does the Department of Education have some programs that have value? Probably. But do we need all that overhead of an entire department for it? And then if you talk to teachers and others at a local level, there is so much extra overhead and work that's put on them now because of federal requirements, and to get relatively small amounts of funding, they're having to put out a lot more work, a lot more effort, and in some cases a lot more cost, to a point that it's actually going to be not actually financially to their benefit to be receiving these funds, but they really don't have any choice. Obviously, that is going to vary depending on where you're at in the country. Again, I am in a fairly rich area of the country. Our school districts, roughly 3% of their budget is federal. Mm-hmm. The rest is state and primarily local. Mm-hmm. But the amount of work they have to do, so you cut out that overhead from the federal government, gives teachers more time to actually teach, gives districts more flexibility with their funds to use them where they should be used for their students and the needs of their specific populations. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think there are opportunities for spillover and benefits.
Now, before we run out of time, let me ask you this. If somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, where's a good place for them to go?
It's www.porter, P-O-R-T-E-R, for us, the number 4, US.com. Mm-hmm. And I'm also on Facebook and Twitter at Porter for Us.
Awesome. Steve, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show with us today.
I appreciate it, Arvin, and thank you for having me. Look forward to hearing some of your future episodes.
Awesome. Guys, we just finished talking with Steve Porter. He is running for Congress in Virginia's 11th District in 2018. He is a proponent of smaller government. You can learn more about him at Porter4Us, and that's the number 4, US.com. There are so many great candidates right now who are running for office, but there could be an even more exciting candidate for you, and that person could be you. Imagine if that was you. Imagine if you're the one out there just giving that information, helping inspire people, bringing people in. Listen, when you run for office, I promise you, you will bring in at least one disaffected voter. You'll bring back to politics one person who'd basically just given up on it. It happened to me. I've talked to literally hundreds of people in the libertarian movement and outside the libertarian movement that have had that same experience, where there was finally one candidate who spoke their language, one candidate who understood that a smaller government is a better government. And that person could be you. And if you're ready to do that, please go right now to lp.org. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm your host, Arvin Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvin Vora again next Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week. We'll be right back.